Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. We have a great show for you today. First, something is seriously wrong in Indiana and the Delphi homicide case. The DA who verbally berated that police officer, now she really needs to go. And this is why we don't speak to police upon being arrested. Let me give you an example of the worst explanation why this guy killed his wife. I don't know whether to cry or to laugh. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it.
All right, lawyer. Lawyer. Lawyer.
Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for joining us. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Like if you do. Leave us a comment below. Hit that little bell for notifications. And remember, you can listen to Crime Talk on any of your favorite podcasting apps. Let's go ahead and get straight to the docket today. May 1st, can you believe we are getting close to being halfway through the year? Crazy indeed. All right, let's go ahead and open the record. First on the docket, the Richard Allen case, the Delphi case. Something is not right here, ladies and gentlemen. I understand that Judge Francis C. Gull has some animosity towards the defense attorneys for Richard Allen, but this is getting a little out of hand. So let's get to it. So the defense team for Richard Allen in the Delphi murder case has told the judge that the trial could go past when it was scheduled to last. As you may recall, the judge basically said, I'm giving you all 2 weeks. And Richard Allen is accused of killing Libby German and Abby Williams back in 2017. And the trial was scheduled to go from May 13th through May 31st. Now, the attorneys argued that the prosecution had previously said that they had 118 witnesses and roughly 93 exhibits. The defense said that that's sheer scope of all those witnesses could last the scheduled trial time. Now, the defense said its side of the case would take a couple of weeks to present and that it had 70 witnesses to call. The defense also points to challenges with Mr. Allen needing to be transported to and from the courthouse each day, and that the same is true with the sequestered jurors. Now, the defense stated, quote, the court's approach to such a rigid trial schedule infringing upon Defendant Allen's Sixth Amendment right and underscores the need for the court to conduct scheduling hearings regarding the trial. The defense argues there should be pretrial hearing to discuss how long the trial should last. But the judge responded in an email to all counsel, and this email went out in April 28th, and it said, Judge Gull says jury selection should last 3 days. She said the defense were the ones who requested a speedy trial, and the trial date is the length of the trial, no more, no less. Gull said, well, no attorneys had notified the court when the trial dates were set, that they needed more time. She also said that she has tried a death penalty and life without parole cases with multiple victims in the past in the same time allotted. Gull then takes aim at the defense attorneys looking to identify other potential suspects, saying, oh, by the way, I am quite familiar with the law regarding third-party perpetrators, and unless the defense can provide a nexus between any alleged third-party perpetrators and the charged crimes, those allegations are unsupported and will be inadmissible. Now, Judge Francis C. Gull goes on to say that the defense should be prepared to present the case in a timely way and have its witnesses available to appear quite quickly. She said the defense should not time witnesses poorly and have respect for the time of the jurors. So, ladies and gentlemen, this judge, Francis C. Gull, I mean, we've all dealt in the legal system with difficult judges that want a rocket docket. But this judge is going out of her way to make life miserable for the defense attorneys. And what she is potentially doing here is setting up a redo. Okay. She has yet to have any sort of substantive hearing on any of the motions. She has denied every motion outright. And before the defense has put forth any evidence, she's already saying basically your defense of some alternate suspect is not going to be permitted. So don't even plan on calling those witnesses. Now, yes, normally you must show some nexus when you're saying an alternate suspect. If you're pointing the finger at another suspect, you have to say, show that they had kind of the motive, the opportunity, they were in the area, and that they followed sort of a modus operandi. Now, that may be a little tough for the defense. I'm not going to say that they got this clearly, but the defendant has a constitutional right to present a defense in their case. And when the judge prevents them from presenting that defense, guess what? You are setting up huge appellate issues. And listen, there's no way, I don't care how quick prosecution witnesses are, if they have 118 endorsed witnesses, there's no way that they're going to do that. The last trial that I just did that went into 4 weeks, we had 32 witnesses just on the prosecution side. 4 weeks, ladies and gentlemen. So for this judge to say this is all the time you have, unbelievable. I've only seen that once where the court said we have 2 weeks. It was a federal trial. The judge thought, no, we're going to get this thing done. And he said, listen, prosecution, you have 2 weeks. You can have basically 7 days. The rest is for the defense, closings, and deliberations, basically. That was the only time I've ever seen that imposed. And the government said, well, if that's all we got, we'll pare it down and we'll do what we have to do. I don't see them making that same request here for the prosecution to pare down their witnesses. And frankly, it would be an automatic reversal if somehow she didn't allow the defense to present a case if they have witnesses, because the court has run out of time. What the court is really trying to do here is say, well, Mr. Defense Attorneys, Mr. Smarty Pants, you demanded a speedy trial. How are we going to get this done? This is what we allotted for the trial. You should have made me aware of this. Oh, are you now saying that you would like to waive Mr. Allen's speedy trial rights and set this out so that we can schedule it for more time? Kind of seems like what the judge is trying to do here. The next issue in the Richard Allen case is now the defense is saying that there is new phone evidence from the hours surrounding the death, which could shed a little more light on the case. Now, there's been a flurry of pleadings filed in this case, and some of these pleadings filed on Tuesday request for a fourth time that a search warrant of Mr. Allen's home be thrown out, arguing that there have been delays in the prosecutors turning over this evidence. The defense also claimed in the filings that it received information on April 26 regarding the whereabouts of Libby's cell phone when she went missing with Abby on February 13th of 2017. And in their latest request for a hearing on the search warrant, the defense team has said that the Indiana State Police troopers received information on the location of Libby's phone from AT&T, and the girl's phone had connected to a cell tower near the Monon High Bridge Trail in Delphi, Indiana, on the day they vanished. The device is said to have stopped pinging at 5:44 p.m. So Allen's defense team is saying that the police believe the information which they were receiving from AT&T indicated that the cell phone was no longer in the area or no longer in a working condition. However, the phone made contact with a tower once more at 4:33 a.m. on February 14th. So, obviously, we know the girls' bodies were found roughly 8 hours later, and the defense team for Mr. Allen claims that the phone and the girls had left the woods near the trail, arguing the timeline doesn't line up with the 90-minute window prosecutors alleged that Mr. Allen was there at the trail. Now, this could be somewhat important because this juncture, Richard Allen is the only person charged. And if Richard Allen is the only one alleged to have committed the crime at all, he's not charged under a theory of conspiracy or complicity. And we haven't heard of any potential other suspects. So the plot thickens. So according to what we do know from some various filings was that Libby's phone was found under her shoe. And according to the defense, if Allen killed the girls, the phone should have never moved after the murder and shouldn't have lost contact with the cell tower for 11 hours. It's also been alleged that Mr. Allen confessed to the killings multiple times since he's been behind bars. And in a phone call back on April 3rd of 2023 between Allen and his wife, Kathy, it's alleged that Mr. Allen told his wife that he confessed to committing the murders at least five times. Now, his wife, Kathy, upon allegedly hearing that, ends the phone call and hangs up rather abruptly. Now, as you may recall, police had also been investigating a guy by the name of Ron Logan after the bodies of Abby and Libby were found 1,400 feet from his home. And it was initially believed that Logan matched the appearance of a man in a Snapchat video taken by the girls. However, after being questioned by investigators, it was determined that Logan wasn't involved in the murders and no charges were filed against him. Now, Logan later died in January of 2022, but it gets even weirder because his ex-girlfriend, Connie Dillman, alleged that her former lover, boyfriend, was the killer. She says, "That's your voice," she's referring to as a video taken by Abby and Libby that shows the man in the blue jacket saying "down the hill." She said, quote, "I heard the voice of down the hill thousands of times. That is Ron Logan," Miss Dillman said. So the plot thickens, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be tricky here to see if the defense can pull this off without a continuance and if the prosecution can do that in the 2 weeks allotted. Seems unlikely. And then on top of that, you've got a judge that has absolute contempt for the defense in this case if she is going to be able to rein in that contempt and at least present a fair trial. I guess we know why she doesn't want this trial televised, because it's kind of looking like the fix is in. I don't know if Mr. Allen did it. I don't know if he confessed, but I'd sure like to see it to make up my own mind instead of having the judge keep us out of the trial of one of the biggest trials, not only in the state of Indiana, but in the country in a very long time. We'll follow up. In fact, those pleadings are so interesting. My little summary probably didn't do him justice. I may do just a separate podcast just of those pleadings. So, all right, next on the docket, remember that district attorney? That's right, Miss Dorley. She was in a heated conversation back on April 22nd with an officer who followed her to her home after she was flagged for driving some 20 miles an hour over the speed limit. Now, Miss Dorley was driving 55 in a 35 mile per hour zone. And she's now got a little bit of state inquiry into her behavior. Now, Ms. Dorley only admitted that she was driving 55 in a 35 zone after this body cam made her look like a raging biatch. And it went viral. And because she got caught, because she didn't think that it would get out to the world. So as you can see, she gets out of the door. "Oh, I'm the DA. I'm going 55 coming from work." When the officer tells Ms. Dorley, "Well, that's the reason for the stop, and don't really care if you were coming from work." And then she tries to go into her house, and the officer says, "No, you can't go." And she's like, "I'm the DA," starts calling the boss, trying to use her position of authority to get out of it. Like I said, tries to call the police chief, I should say, a guy by the name of Dennis Comeyer, and asks, "Can you please tell them," referring to the police officer, "to leave me alone," as the officer tells her that she made the situation bigger than it had to be by refusing to pull over. Dorley responds with, "Just write me a ticket." So a couple days later, after she gets exposed for being a corrupt politician because she believes she is above the law, she makes an apology. "I've paid the ticket, and I'm going to take some classes and be nicer and respect the police. But, you know, I was just having a bad day, so bygones will be, you know, it's over. What's the big deal?" Anyway, like I said, she went on just basically ranting, raving about how she didn't think that she had to pull over, and she's so close to her driveway, and she just can't understand why she can't get a little professional courtesy. And the cops should have arrested her, really should have arrested this woman. And he was just doing his job. She just didn't like it, and then she gets caught. And typical freaking politician, the way she handled it. Well, now we also learn that Ms. Dorley likes to berate her staff the same way that she does police officers. And several DAs in her office are a little not pleased, which is probably why they released that internal email to the press. where she calls her DAs a disaster, plain and simple. And she goes on to say, you know, on a positive note, she gives props to those who have been achieving tasks at a rate that she deemed reasonable, writing, however, many of you are working extremely hard in your cases and have been diligent managing your caseloads. Thank you so much. But that tone quickly changes quite furiously, claiming that many of you are a disaster, plain and simple, and that's not going to be tolerated. She continued to emphasize her dissatisfaction in bold letters. It is unacceptable to ignore your duties as a prosecutor. I've gone to great lengths to advocate for higher salaries and raises. To see many of you drop the ball on so many cases is discouraging and disheartening. Starting at the end of the week of May 6th, each of you, including the bureau chiefs, will meet with me personally to discuss your caseloads. Bureau chiefs need not attend the meeting with the members of your bureau. And appellate attorneys need not be concerned. Be prepared to discuss the status of all your cases, including felony investigations. So, you know, frankly, sometimes you got to light a fire. I get that. But this Ms. Dorley seems to be a cold, calculating politician when she gets caught, wants to look good in the public eye, and then just rude to everybody else in the world. And you know what it is, ladies and gentlemen? You know if somebody's a good person when they're nice to people that can't do anything for them. And she's just a bad, bad person. I truly think she needs to go. And at a minimum, she needs to be voted out of office when her term is up if we can't get rid of her beforehand. And when people criticized Ms. Dorley's office for a high turnover rate, with basically she says, hey, it's comparable to any other office. And guess what? You're just saying that to be sexist. People were just saying, hey, it seems like you have a high turnover rate. You're sexist. So, typical politician won't engage, just simply wants to call people's names to try and stop the conversation. Next on the docket, this is why any attorney worth their salt will say, do not talk to the police if you are in fact arrested. And this is not a good way to scare your wife, okay? This is one of the worst stories that I have ever heard. And this man is going to prison for the rest of his life. And yes, he should go for killing his wife, but he should also go to the worst story ever, gallows. It's terrible. So take a listen to this. A Missouri man is behind bars after he claimed to have shot at his wife to try and scare her. But oops, he just happened to hit her 5 times and killed her. Oops, it happens, right? No, it doesn't happen. Jeez. Oh, wait, there's more. It gets better. So the Highway Patrol in Missouri responded about 10:30 p.m. To this house in Lawson. Apparently, it's about 40 miles northeast of Kansas City. And the victim was found suffering from several gunshot wounds in her bedroom closet. Police found 5 bullet casings near the deceased body. Now, the victim's husband, a guy by the name of Lawrence Patrick, needless to say, he was taken into custody. And when he was taken into custody, you know, he got to go give an interview and give your side of the event, right? And he has said, allegedly, that he and his wife had been arguing Saturday when she grabbed a gun from under the pillow, pointed it at him, and told him to leave. But he refused. Lawrence then grabbed control of the firearm and described how his wife tried to leave the home, but then he prevented her from leaving. Apparently, a little scuffle ensued, and Patty Neary, the wife, fell into the bedroom closet. The husband said he fired 1 shot beside his wife's head to scare her. He allegedly claimed his wife continued to verbally berate him, so he fired another shot with the intent of hitting her hair or to graze her skin. He said both shots, you know, might have hit her, and she started kicking and grabbing the gun, apparently, after those first 2 shots, which caused him to fire more shots. Now, according to the troopers, he told them that he fired another shot at the top of her head, which caused her to quit verbally berating him. He then said that he left the home through the window, not the front door, but then he realized that he forgot his phone. So he returned to grab his phone, and he could tell that his wife was fading. So he fired another shot, wait for it, in an attempt to wake her up. Well, needless to say, Mr. Lawrence was taken into custody, charged with first-degree murder, and is being held without bond. I shot her to scare her because she was verbally berating me. I'm not going to take that in my own house. And then when I leave, she's fading away. So I was trying to wake her up, so I shot her again. Worst story of why I killed somebody ever. Worst story ever. And the reality of it is, it's probably the absolute godforsaken truth, which makes it absolutely horrible. I'm going to hell because I laughed. I'm sorry for his wife. I am sorry for his wife's family, children, all that good stuff. But that is the worst story I have ever heard. He needs to go to prison for the worst storyteller ever. All right. Finally today, our dumb criminal of the day. A 20-year-old man is behind bars charged with throwing a fried chicken during a little domestic spat at his home in Florida. Now, according to police, the poultry pelting occurred on Sunday afternoon in a Clearwater home with Kanye Medley and his sibling. Now, during this alleged altercation, Mr. Medley grabbed a bag of Church's chicken from his sister and began throwing pieces of chicken at her. One piece of fried chicken hit the victim in the back and left debris of food on her shoulders. Yes, that's called grease, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, after being read his Miranda rights, Mr. Medley reported admittedly throwing two pieces of chicken and one hit her. Why was he throwing the chicken? Well, Mr. Medley stated he did this because he had not eaten and he did not want the piece of chicken the victim offered him, so he became upset. So despite the, being a little hangry, instead of eating a Snickers bar, Mr. Medley threw the chicken back at his sister, and now he's been charged with domestic violence. Go figure. Now, Mr. Medley is a paltry 230 pounds, and guess what? He has allegedly been arrested before for biting and strangling his sister, as well as slamming a door on her arm and striking her with a piece of wooden decor. Well, Mr. Medley got lucky. He's not going to be charged with a felony because his sister doesn't want to see him be prosecuted. So he got misdemeanor charges. Mr. Medley, you are a dumb criminal of the day. If you're going to throw a chicken from Church's, I think you need to wrap it in like a paper towel or something so the grease doesn't come off, let alone the fried chicken part of it. But Mr. Medley, dumb. If she offers you a piece of chicken, politely give it back or say thank you very much. You don't grab it and throw it back at her. Doesn't make any sense, Mr. Medley. Anyway, that's all we have for you today, ladies and gentlemen. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.